Hi, you're listening to the My Body, My Story podcast.
We used to play hide and seek on night shifts in the city, in the police cars. And King's Cross, if it was a quiet night, like Tuesday night, we used to get on the police radio and get each other to, you know, go hide and we'll come and find you.
This is the 45 over 45 chapter where we celebrate rule breakers and role models, the women who inspire us to live life our way and to show their sensuality, beauty, soul, and true essence. Here, we talk about what it's like to be 45 plus, adjusting to the changes that come with time, and we listen to the stories of our participants. If you have an interesting story, we'd love for you to participate. You can email us at info@alexandrawalker.com. That's Alexandra spelt with a K-S. Or visit our website, alexandrawalker.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to My Body, My Story project. Today with us, Yolanda, in the studio. Hi, Yolanda.
Hi, Alessandra.
Welcome to the studio. Welcome to the project. And while you're sitting in the makeup chair and Nicole is doing makeup for you, I'll be asking you a few questions. So tell us a bit about yourself.
Well, I'm 57 years of age. I don't know why I start with my age, but yeah, I'm loving where I'm at the moment with my age. So I am a first-time grandmother of an almost two-year-old grandson, and I have three children and two stepchildren. I'm in my third marriage. And this is my best marriage. Love it so far and absolutely feel like it's a forever relationship, which is awesome. I work for Community Corrections, which is like a parole officer, but as a manager of officers. So I manage an office at the moment in regional New South Wales, Moree. Yeah, I used to be a police officer for about 20 years, but I've been doing this role now, or this job now, for about 15 years. So, I feel like I'm working in a field that honours who I am as a person. Mm. Yeah, building leaders, you know, growing leaders, I should say, and just. Bringing the best out in people who would probably see themselves as not something who they are. So, I'm an encourager.
It's a long-time career in this field, yeah.
Yes.
So it's very interesting. I want to ask you so many questions. And how is it to be a police officer? And, you know, how did you come up with this idea to become a police officer? And was it like a challenging, or it's more routine work? So
I have the unique gift, I suppose, of knowing. And when I was 12, I knew I wanted to be a police officer. I actually, my history is I come from Holland, so I'm Dutch. I came out here when I was four. But unbeknownst to me, because, you know, we have a very large family. My father and my mother have both, 20 children in their family. So very big family. We could never get to know, you know, any of them. We were the only ones here in Australia. But unbeknownst to me, at the age of 12, I knew I wanted to be a police officer. That was my
dream.
And but I actually have police officers and guards, you know, official guards that are part of my family in Holland. So yeah, so it was actually when I found that out, I was like, oh, no wonder I'm doing what I'm doing.
Yeah.
a challenging role. It was almost like I was trying to reach my personal best, getting to that, because I had actually failed my schooling. And by that, I mean, I didn't pass my HSC. I failed dismally. But I still got to do what I wanted to do because I persevered. I continued to push for what I wanted in my career. And it pushes you beyond your boundaries, beyond your comfort zones. Mm-hmm. I was a street police officer, so not behind a desk. And I was also, for about 10 years, a trainer in the police academy as a weapons instructor. Mm. So teaching.
So you know
other
how to defend yourself yeah. and your family for sure.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I've had to do that a couple of times. In my life. It's sort of another story wow. that's rather in contrast to my work. But I loved being a policewoman. But after 20 years, I was actually suffering and always questioning too, like, how can I influence these people who I'm arresting? Mm-hmm. It actually, there was a defining moment in my career as a police officer that allowed me to understand where I needed to shift mm-hmm. in order to be the true person that I am, which is an encourager, someone who believes more in people than they think of themselves. Mm. And this role has very much been about that, whereas policing is very punitive, you know, like you're arresting people and sending them before the courts for justice, so that justice is served, kind of thing.
So you're dealing already with the consequences of their behavior.
That's right. Yeah. So then moving into corrections is very much dealing with behavior change.
Do you have any interesting or dangerous story you can tell us, or like some episodes you remember the most from your career
as a police officer?
Yeah.
I do have a couple. There's so many though. But sad ones as well. So I specialised in domestic violence. Mm-hmm. And the irony of that was I was experiencing domestic violence myself.
Oh, God.
So that's where, you know, the realisation for me was like an awakening. It's like, hey, hang on a minute, I'm actually in that myself. So it's, you know, sort of a sense of connection with that. I was a police officer in the 80s, and that was very a naughty time for a lot of police, very corrupt and, really dangerous time as well, depending on how deep you were in corruption. So not that I was very much against it, but I think because I was against it, I was, you know, sort of...
in danger.
As well. So, you know, those sorts of stories are things that I really can't, you know, disclose without putting myself in a space where, I'm revealing things that you probably shouldn't even really know. And I've worked all over the place. So here in the city was one of my favourite places to work, and Manly. But I've,
was it quiet or on the contrary?
No, it was busy. It was really, really busy. But we made our busy as well. Yeah. And by saying we made our busy, we used to play hide and seek on night shifts in the city, in the police cars. And King's Cross, if it was a quiet night, like Tuesday nights is generally a really quiet time mm-hmm. on night shift. And we used to get on the police radio and get each other to, you know, go hide and we'll come and find you, you know. So they would, you know, go hide in the city somewhere, some laneway or whatever, and we would race around the city.
Each other.
Trying to catch each other. So those sort of fun times, but, you know, probably inappropriate as well, just to keep you awake. But you were also being very proactive as well, because you ended up finding things in places where if you were hiding somewhere, it's like, what are they doing there? You know, like, and ended up with a few arrests because they were doing things that they shouldn't have been doing. So exciting, really exciting, fun, dangerous. And, I think the tipping point for me, like I said, was domestic violence. I remember I was working in the country, and I'd have done most of my stuff in the country, one too many domestics, and got very, very over the top with having to arrest this person, you know, struggling with arresting this person and putting myself in danger as well. So, you know, firearms, you know, that kind of thing. And that's a really dangerous position to put yourself in, for the potential for bad outcomes. But luckily it didn't. And for me, you know, when you're pushed to a point like that and you break down in tears, you know that's a moment where you, hey, hang on a minute. I need to fix that. Change it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was a turning point for me career-wise, but also my family was at the time. Yeah, my relationship too, because that was really, really toxic.
And what do you think the main reason of this kind of a behavior, why people do that, being violent towards their close ones? Is it drugs, alcohol, or it's just like...
No, it's control.
Control
issues. Yeah, it's power and control. So people are trying to control things within the relationship that they probably are fighting against, or they're both, you know, up against. And
so it's psychological more.
Yeah, very psychological and very, very controlling behaviours. And then, you know, one party not having the locus of control, and, you know, perhaps allowing things to happen that they probably would not, under normal circumstances, be faced with or to put up with.
So, and then you moved to correction.
Then I moved to corrections, yeah. And a huge, like, personal growth opportunity as well, because whilst you're learning about the intricacies of the people that we manage, that you're learning a lot about yourself as well. So, yeah, it was a huge personal growth trajectory too. So that was, you know, sort of a time in the beginning, very much a time where I knew I was on the right track as far as my own personal growth was concerned, but also what I could contribute for people about, you know, around their own change. So being a life coach was something that I delved into in my current role as well. So personally, I sought study as a life coach because that was my own personal growth too, with a view to starting up my own business. But I never got that far. I sort of did, but didn't pursue it.
Maybe not yet.
Not yet. Perhaps that's right. Perhaps that's right.
Yeah. So. Can you explain to me, like, what is this? I still cannot understand completely the correction. Do you work with people who already committed this crime of abusing others, or they been once caught and put on parole
orders. Court orders. Yeah.
Court orders.
Yeah. So you got court orders, you've got a sentence which, you know, brings you to jail and then come out of jail. So both. Been in both areas where. Very much in the community, so where people are on community orders, but dealing with people as they come out of jail on parole. Worked in the jails as well. So.
Wow.
Yeah.
So you make sure that they don't do it again?
Can never guarantee that.
Yeah, no.
It's more about having conversations and, encouraging them to seek help around their behaviour change. So finding, you know, identifying what it is that brings them to that crazy point, and then referring them to people who can help them, but also us having those discussions and that that ongoing preparation for change.
So, do you think, because you said you worked in the jail as well, do you think really that jail helps people to rethink what they do, or it's more of a punishment for what they did? And like, because that's always been my big question, and I wish George was here because he's really interested in this subject. He researches that jail subject a lot, and it's been always my question: does it really help to correct people, or it's just the act of justice, like you punished and here you go?
I think traditionally it's always been an act of punishment, that jail has been there to contain, especially the dangerous ones. Most people are good people, but there are some, and it really is only a very small number that are committed to committing crime. You know, that's their thing. And that takes a long time to, grow out of, I suppose. But no, it's not the answer. It's not the only answer. Jail is just a timeout, I believe. But I think the jails are changing now too. So as part of this whole, there's a whole shift in thinking around that. And It's the research that's been done overseas that has seen a shift in punishment, mm-hmm. or jail as punishment, and that there's different ways of doing things. So we're doing programs in jail now. The custodial officers are now having those conversations that we're having in the jail now too. So it's becoming a language and a behaviour of the system that's changing. And there's alternatives to sentencing now. So, alternatives in sentencing. So it's not just jail. So if you, meet a certain criteria now and you have capacity to do things differently, the courts can administer their sentencing a little bit differently now too, to enable those other therapeutic opportunities to occur outside of the prison system. Oh, look, it's a long way to change, but it's a good, good opening at the moment. It's a good start now.
Oh, it's very interesting.
And, I've met some really, really dangerous people, but, I guess I'm the kind of person that tries to see the good in everybody. Mm-hmm. But like I said, there's probably, 2% that require jail. But not only that, they need, intensive treatment and psychological intervention treatment to, dissuade from behaviours that are very, very odd, especially when it comes to our children.
Yeah, I agree. Mm. Yeah, children, that's a very, very sensitive subject.
Very much so.
So... I know we spoke a lot your career and everything, but maybe we didn't mention something else. What are you most passionate about, or you just want to wrap it up if it's the same subject?
It's similar. It sort of relates, I suppose. I'm really passionate about my faith. It's something that's always been part of my life, but in the last 10 years has been very... much in my focus, and that's like being part of my personal growth journey as well. Being a Christian woman, I was always a Catholic, but I've moved to the Christian faith and being reborn. So it's really that's a really amazing awakening for me. That I wished I had of like captured earlier on in life. I was a Catholic girl and very reverent. Like I went to church every Sunday. I had certain issues with my faith back then because it was so contradictory to society and whatnot. And so I left it when I got married the first time. I didn't pay attention to it, and that happened for a number of years, probably about 10, 15 years. And then when my second marriage broke down, that was when I went back to it. So I knew that that's where I needed to be in order to just fulfill my need around my spiritual journey. So that's something I really love my church, especially the one in Wagga where I spent a lot of time investing in being around faithful people and having, influence for people to understand their own spirituality. And that's carried through to my little town that I live in now in Glen Innes, and we have a little church, and I'd like to introduce some things that really... I'm actually really passionate about women too. I think that's part of my domestic violence kind of thing, because I spent a lot of time in the courts as a domestic violence officer, and when it comes to women, just having that special acknowledgement of who they are, because one of my favourite quotes is Psalms 139:14, which is, you are fearfully and wonderfully made, and I stand by that. Sorry.
No, it's very, very emotional. I'm so happy that I see our conversations also as a journey of, you know.
Nicole, so, hang on. Yeah, it is. But just acknowledging that is the joy inside me.
Mm.
And that brings joy. I believe, I don't know why I'm crying. I think, you know, I used to be a singer. I lost my voice when I had a hysterectomy. When I sing, I cry. So I don't know what that's about.
I think it's like letting your feelings and emotions out.
Sorry, look.
It's your makeup. Oh, Nicole will correct it. Don't worry about it. She's still halfway through your makeup. I think every one of us has our own way to let our emotions out, and we're not able to do it one way, but found some other ways.
Yeah.
And if, like, for example, you do it through singing, and sometimes, and I see it also psychological, that if one day you did it through your voice and then you lost your voice, there's some kind of a block, you know? So then true. You find more creative ways to do it.
Yes.
So
yeah.
Like maybe you go to, I don't know.
Well, I write.
Do something else.
Yeah,
yeah
write. I'm a writer. Yeah. I need to honor that more. I need to focus more on that. I think I'm too busy.
And sometimes God pushes us to other ways because we cannot discover it without losing something. So
yeah,
he takes
exactly
one thing to give you another.
Yeah. Yeah. So. Absolutely. And I know I'm a writer. I keep, even strangers, on Facebook will write to me and say, you should be writing.
Mm.
If you're not a writer already, kind of thing. Anyway, yeah,
I need to. You have such an interesting career, and I bet you can write so many interesting stories. And
I have to put a caveat.
Yeah.
It has to be like, because some of the things that I've seen, it could be detrimental. So maybe change the names of the people that these things are about. But yeah, seen a lot, and probably a lot more than what the average person has seen.
So do you still sing or not anymore?
I worship, worship singing, which is different. But I used to be a cappella barbershop choir, so the four quartet, and I did that for 10 years, and I've been parts of different choirs and.
Mm-hmm.
I had a first soprano voice, and now I've got a baritone, so it's really very different. I have my moments every now and then, and it's probably when I'm worshiping that I sing my best. Mm-hmm. Like I'm very I feel very relaxed and very privileged when I'm. It's just immersion, absolute immersion. Yeah. I sing actually when I do my hiking. It's really weird. I love hiking. My husband joins me on those times, and he said your voice is actually very different when I'm singing in the bush.
Mm, maybe it's to do with the
altitude. Maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know. But he says it's wonderful. He says it's like you're relaxed and you're not, you're just immersed in it.
So you hike together?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do. It is something that I've done on my own, but he's now joining me, as part of our relationship. That they're adventures that we really love. So, I love to travel. I have an adventurous spirit, very spirited that way. And
where do you travel usually? Like you go
Tasmania. I love Tasmania. That's why I go there every year. Here I love the mountains, so I'm up in the mountains in the cold. That's probably why I'm living in the mountains now. It's pretty cold, but I love the cold. I love being in the snow, and the colder the better.
You're in the right country.
Oh, look, I'm a bit jealous of one of my girlfriends. She's married an Austrian, and she goes to Austria every year, and Switzerland, and I'm like, oh, that's my dream, is to go to the Alps and just, wander the Alps and do all those, do those adventurous things that they take for granted over there.
Wherever you live, and probably they think that you take for granted ocean and you know, warm weather.
Yeah, that's right.
So let's talk about our age and changes we have with age, and what is the positive change have you experienced so far?
Just growing into myself, like I'm headed towards the, you know, the 60s, and I feel so liberated. Like it's, there's a sense of freedom and this sense of achievement, which I know doesn't stop at 60, because there's so much more to do in, you know, in my world of thinking. It's just the ability to be able to go, you know what, let's just pack a bag and put on our boots and just go, you know, without any encumbrance. And this the friendships, you know, that you grow at this age are just so much more meaningful and deep at times, you know, that it's just so... I feel blessed, you know, to know the people that I've come across, you know, as an older version of myself. And career-wise, it's almost like I can be anything that I want to be. It's just literally just walking through that door, you know, that window of opportunity, go for it, you know.
And your kids grown up?
Yes, so I have three adult children, two adult stepchildren, so they're all living their own independent lives, and you know, they're still a big part of my life, especially my grandson, who's my daughter's baby, but he's mine, and he's delicious. He's just a delightful little man, and has so much energy about him that I really, really love, like a cheekiness, and he loves to learn from me. So we do a lot together. I do see him regularly. He doesn't live close, but we've been going down to see him every other weekend. So, yeah. And so that experience, as much as I'm probably not a fan of children, I'm not, you know, the nurturing type, but I love him. He's just...
But it's yours.
Yeah.
He's your grandson.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And so, you know, having that different relationship with children is quite, I feel a sense of joy and peace about it. Whereas with your own children, I think there's a huge sense of responsibility commitment and, you know, whereas, you know.
You just can play and then let it.
I can play.
Let it back.
I can play with my baby. Back. Yeah. I do that a lot. I do expend a lot of energy with him, but I love every minute of it. There's not even the cranky bits, you know, where he's not doing what he's told, but, you know, you can forgive it and let it go and not get so caught up in it, you know, whereas you do as a mum.
So you have a daughter and sons?
I have a daughter and two sons, yeah.
So they're still not... your sons still not give you the joy of
no, not yet. No, he's in the army. One of them is in the army, and my eldest one, I don't think he can. He's not admitted it, but he has a stepson with his partner. They've been trying for many, many years to have a child. So he's in his 30s. But no, not yet. And my youngest is too young. He's like, no, I'm on my own adventure.
Yeah.
Even though he has a long-term girlfriend, she's not in that frame of mind either. So, you know, kudos to them, because like, I was married at a very young age. When I was 20, it was way too young. And I think that was the reason why we split up. I was too immature and still finding my, you know, my me. Enjoying being a police officer and, you know, career and that kind of thing.
So, and what would you say is your biggest challenge at the moment related to the age?
Just the body not doing what it used to do. I feel like I think I'm 20. You know, and so I'm climbing mountains and getting to the top and going, whoa, that's hard yakka. Sore feet, you know, painful, you know, painful experience, which, you know, with mindset shift you can, you know, focus on other things. But you just, like, it's afterwards, after you've, you know, come back down and you've, you know, doing the washing and stuff, and you go, oh, yeah, I'm really tired. I need that nana nap that I don't normally have. The body not doing what I imagine it can do. It's really funny because we went to see Moulin Rouge last night, and it's a really cheeky show, you know, very salaciously sexy show. And the positions they were getting themselves in and the dance and all that sort of thing, you know, I've always, you know, sort of imagined myself being, you know, one of those, you know, can girls or whatever you want to call them. And it's like, yeah, there's no way I can get into those positions ever again. I'd be like an old granny version.
The question, why do you need to?
Yeah, well, that's it too. I don't know. It's the fun side. I think it's just fun. You know, it's, but then the costumes don't look the way that you imagine. you know, the saggy skin and the scars and whatnot. I mean, I can accept all those. That's, I don't have an issue with them. But, not being able to do what I used to do.
Yeah. It's just like, you know, realizing that it's changing.
Just limitations. changing physical limitations. Not mental ones. You know, I have a can-do attitude, so I'll climb my Mount Everest if that's what I wanted to do. And I've done that metaphorically a few times. That's the only thing.
We spoke about so many things you did and, you know, that you're passionate about. But what do you think, or what can you name as your greatest accomplishment so far?
It's a hard one to actually answer because there's just so many. I think I've been able to...
name them all.
I know, right? But I've been able to accomplish everything that I've put my mind to, even though I thought I was a failure.
Interesting.
Yeah. I thought I was a failure for many years because I didn't pass my schooling. I never went to university. I never did any sort of external learning. But I've still been able to do everything that anybody else could have done.
Mm.
So without a university degree and without, you know, sort of these societal expectations or parental expectations that we sort of seem to have, because of our upbringing. I think it's being able to look at myself and go, hey, you're actually not a failure.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I've had three marriages and, done some really ordinary things in my initial relationship that put me in a space of failure, in a headspace of failure. That I can still hold my head up and say, hey, you're a good woman. And you've done everything
you wanted.
That you want to do, yeah. Mm. Being able to achieve everything that you've wanted to do. And, not kill too many other people in the process.
That's a good one.
I think I've grown people in the process as well, so I'd like to think that anyway, yeah.
But if you could go back in time and meet your 30-year-old self, what advice would you give her, knowing yourself now?
Yeah, yes. Yes, it's okay to be alone.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's okay to be on your own. I think at that age, even though at 30 I was shit hot and shiny, I was really healthy, I was I had a great career, but I was in a failed marriage and I'd met my second husband and felt like I needed to validate myself by being married to him. Because I'd be on the shelf otherwise, you know. And I think that's what was in my head a lot of the time, that if I didn't have him, I was nothing.
Yeah.
And I think he sort of had me feeling that way too, not casting any disparaging remarks on him.
Mm-hmm.
That was the toxicity of the relationship a lot of the time. He was, high up in corrections and... he was the governor of a jail, and so, you know, in the face, on the face, he was this important person, and he wanted to be an important person. And but unfortunately he had some collateral damage, and some of that, one of those was me. Yeah. So yeah, and his own daughter, so as a result as well. So yeah, but I think I would tell my 30-year-old self to enjoy life and just be independent and grow as an independent woman. Travel more, because I started traveling in my 40s instead of doing it sooner. And I, oh my God, I've just been to some awesome places and met some amazing, amazing people as a result of traveling. And yeah.
And what would you say to other women? Because you worked with so many of them, and who are young, who still living there, like in the, I don't know, 30s, 40s, like,
yeah,
but they will eventually reach our age. And so what would you tell them?
Just to dive deep into who they are, you know, who do you want to be? Sometimes, you know, or my reflection on myself is, you know, you can be a bit superficial during the 20s, 30s. You start becoming a little deeper in your 40s. And I think, you know, that's a time where you just really do truly understand yourself more as a woman. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, the ones that I would work with, I'd say, like, keep your sense of humour, be playful, but also get deep about who you want to be, you know, and where you want to be.
Why do you think we have to reach our 40s to start getting to know ourselves? Why do you think we don't do it earlier?
Busyness. Mm-hmm. Busyness, maybe fear of missing out, you know, always wanting to be places, you know, and be part of things. Just stopping and understanding what the feelings are that you're experiencing, mm-hmm. What you're seeing, you know, using your senses, the seeing, the smelling, yeah. the feelings, the emotions that sort of come up as a result of those experiences, and understanding what they are and what they mean for you, mm-hmm. and sharing that with other women. From a real perspective, not just from a superficial, you know, Facebook, Instagram type, mm-hmm. superficiality. Because, I do find that space a little bit superficial, even though I am a Facebook person. But I think we're too engrossed in the digital space and the expectation of what, you know, society is currently, which is fast. Mm-hmm. Fast. Everything's fast.
Yeah, changing very fast as well.
Yeah. And to slow down and understand what that is, what that moment is for you. Mm-hmm. Enjoy the moment, I think, is really what that is. It's like, what's happening now for you? How are you feeling it? How are you seeing it? Yeah.
And I feel like it's also related to idea of a perfect body image question, like what you're saying now, and about the superficial, some people trying to be what they're not, and this idea comes from somewhere. So where do you think it comes from?
Yeah.
And what is it for you, your perfect body would be?
So I think it comes from the media. I think there's a lot of media influence and also Hollywood, perhaps, as well. But I think Hollywood's getting a little more real with themselves too, and there's a lot of actors now, female actors, that are really, you know, really embody the essence of, you know, being women and natural women, not fake women. I mean, there's certainly the Kardashians and that I really loathe, you know. But... yeah, the ideal body image is a healthy, yeah, mentally healthy. And because with mental health, I think the physical health is a big part of how you see yourself as well.
I agree with you. So healthy body is the perfect one.
Yeah, for you and how you see it. So mental health is how you see it, is the healthy version of you. Getting to that point is the hard bit because there's so many competing interests, aren't there? You've got a huge fraternity of women who are going to the gym, but why are they going? You know?
Yeah.
Is there a premeditation? Is there a pre-expectation? Are they real? Are they realistic expectations? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, the clothing industry, the makeup and cosmetic industry. The cosmetic industry is
that's an atrocious. They benefit place. From this mm-hmm. perfect body image
yes.
a lot.
Yeah, yeah. It's so fake. But I do understand with some people there's a psychological need, but really, in essence, that can be dealt with in a different way if they only spent the time and energy to understand who they are and a sense of acceptance around that.
And it's interesting you mentioned the clothing industry, and just think about old times where a woman would go to a tailor and do a tailored dresses for herself. And it just with this mass production where the big companies started producing all the same style and like
sizing.
Yeah, like yeah. four, mm. five, six sizes and that's it. And so that's where like the pressure comes from, like, okay, we will not fit dress for you, you will fit into our dresses.
Yeah, the dress will fit you. And you've got to squeeze into that or not, you know, that. Yeah.
Go to the gym, go to the surgeon.
Yeah, that's right. I think, once again, it's become very superficial and mass manufacture, you know, mass produced. And is that sort of wrong? No, but it does subliminally shape the thinking around shapes the thinking for women. Yeah. Hey, hang on, I'm not, this doesn't fit me, I'm not perfect, I don't, you know, and, you know, depending on their own self-talk and the influences around them, of course, then, you know, that can sometimes be detrimental to how they see themselves. Mm.
And what does it mean to you, feeling good and looking good? What comes first?
Being out in nature. fresh air. Fresh air and nature. Being out in the bush, being out on, walking, just walking. Feeling good is, just that fresh air. It allows me to relax, allows the brain and the body to relax. Looking good, the roses in the cheeks, basically, the smile on the face,
yeah.
the smile in the eyes.
And what makes you feel the most beautiful?
Singing, music sends me to a different place. It's like it transports you elsewhere, even though like where you are isn't a bad place, but it's a stuff of dreams. Yeah, I was actually, as a child, I was always told, oh, you're such a dreamer, you know, stop being a dreamer. Well, if I stopped doing that, then I wouldn't be a police officer.
Exactly.
I wouldn't be manager of an office, meeting the people that I meet and helping the people that I do. I wouldn't be able to write. So, you know, those people that said that, were my teachers initially, until I met a teacher who thought I was a brilliant writer. And my own father, my reports, my school reports. She's a dreamer. She's not in the class. Obviously not my learning style.
But that's why you decided I don't need school.
Yeah, but I did stick it out. I stayed because I wanted to be a police officer. But even though I didn't cope well in the senior years, I did have a brilliant English teacher And she was my saving grace. Yeah. I don't do numbers. Hate math.
You see, it's very important what what teacher do you have. Like, teachers can be very motivating and demotivating. I think you mentioned that, but I'll ask it again, and maybe you have more than one. Do you have a favorite quote saying about being a woman, or your favorite one?
No, well, Psalms 139 is my favorite psalm, 139:14. But I do, you know, my saying is always be you. Mm. Always be you. Doesn't matter what position you're in, what kind of, you know, circumstances, tap into you, be you. Mm. Mm. If you're not understanding who that is, then find out who that is.
Thank you, Yolanda. Thank you very much for such a great interview. Mm-hmm. I've really enjoyed it. I would love to ask you many more questions. Maybe I will, but
secrets, later in Alexandra, the day. Yeah.
And I hope you will enjoy the rest of the day and your photo shoot. And welcome again to the project.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. Yeah, really excited.
If you have an interesting story, we'd love for you to participate. You can email us at info@alexandrawalker.com. That's Alexandra spelt with a K-S. Or visit our website, alexandrawalker.com.